listen, think, learn, grow. Listen, think, learn, grow. Live.
This is Metaphysical Universe, exploring science and spirituality with Dr. Douglas Kelly and Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Good evening and welcome to the Spirit of Life program for Wednesday, February 16th. My name is Michael Kelly and I'm here with Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Good evening, Michael, and happy full moon. We're going to talk about that soon.
We are. Mm-hmm. And beautiful evening it is, a wonderful full moon. It's going to be an interesting discussion. Thanks to those that take the time to join us live in the chat for this discussion. I'm really looking forward to it. And thanks to those who joined us in the archives, who catch up on our discussions and kind of conversations about these things that fascinate us all. These questions with no definitive answers so often. Spirit of Life is, of course, a weekly service and educational program of the International Church of Metaphysical Humanism. Our mission is to explore and empower the human spirit, as well as to explore science and spirituality. Now, in addition to this broadcast, ICMH offers other educational programs that can be found at metaphysicsinstitute.org and tfuniversity.org. Before we get into our topic tonight, we're going to begin with our 9 abbreviated principles of belief. Those are, 1, do no harm, do right. 2, we believe in the indomitable power of the human spirit. The answers we seek already exist within us. 3, we believe that we alone are responsible for and capable of solving human social problems. 4, we are all equal, one planet, one race, one ancestry, and one destiny. 5, we recognize and honor the divine energy that exists in all living things. 6. We are physical and spiritual beings. Consciousness survives death of the physical body. 7. Self-acceptance, self-responsibility, and respect for free will creates self-completeness. 8. Metaphysical education and practical life skills empower the human spirit and enhance the human condition. And 9. Expanding human consciousness leads to human evolution and peaceful coexistence. Now, this is kind of an odd thing to say. I'm excited about tonight's topic, but I'm always excited about our topics. So I guess it's really not that out of the norm. But, you know, I love history, and the history of divination is our subject tonight. And Dr. Vicki, I'm looking forward to this.
Well, I was looking for a little book that I've had since I was like 16 years old, and I couldn't find it on my bookshelf, although I did come across my Life After Life book from the early 1970s. Yeah, that was fun. But
recent callback.
We can go back thousands of years to all the various historical references to divination. And I think that, number one, the curiosity about what's going to happen, whether it's crops, you know, how well your crops are going to do, or if it's something within a family, and is this a good union? You know, I think that historically we've been very curious, and we use all kinds of things. My question has always been, is who decides what the interpretation is? That's fascinated me, Michael. When we go back to, usually it was the elders who interpreted by observation, you know, that constant observation to know how a certain symbol, or let's say you're going to scatter some bones and how they all lay and tell a story, you know, who decides that? So it's got to be a lot of seeing patterns or being taught by a teacher, but whose original thought? So again, whatever we discuss tonight is subjective.
Oh, of course.
I'd like to make that clear off the start, that somebody had to make that up through their own observations of whatever they used. But we can go back to, you know, anything from animals to planets to scattering bones, or there's even things like phrenology. When you know a bumps on somebody's head means certain things in their personality. There's so many ways to divine an answer to a question that's metaphysically based. That makes sense.
I think it absolutely makes sense. I mean, it's the kind of crux of it, isn't it? That we as human beings were naturally built. We've evolved over time to survive based on finding patterns in nature, patterns in existence and life. And one of those things about that is, it's the classic, scientific phrase that correlation does not equal causation. So when those bones are scattered, how do you interpret that? I mean, how do you know that it actually has any connection? Whereas, I could say that because I have this particular rock, it keeps tigers away. But I live in North America. I wouldn't be close to a tiger anyway. But yet I have the rock. There are no tigers. Hence, can I not argue that the rock is keeping tigers away?
Yeah.
And to those listening, yes, you heard one of my pups. It's a German Shepherd named Mira. She gets excited sometimes, but.
Well, Charles is writing in the chat as you're speaking that the minute we mentioned bones, the dog got excited. That's fun. I think that for me, what interested me when I was a young girl is wasn't the tarot until I was like 19 or 20. So when I started having this fascination when I was 12, 13, and it was more about teacups, tea leaves, because my great-grandmother was a teacup reader. And so how they position, if it's at the top of the cup, the bottom of the cup, how they tell stories. It's just, for me, it's the symbols stimulate the idea. It makes sense. But you can't always say a bird means this. A bird can mean...
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
And which maybe a good way to start off in this way is that tonight is what we historically, I want to be careful, the colonized version of tonight's moon is the snow moon of February, certainly for the northern hemisphere. However, I say the colonists because that is attributed to, and I'm going to quote here from the Farmer's Almanac. In the 1760s, it was Jonathan Carver who, was a white guy traveling around. He had coined this moon as the snow moon because there was more snow than at any other time of year, he thought. However, the Cree, the Nahiowe is the proper way of saying the Cree. Cree is a colonized name also. Yeah. Called this the Bald Eagle Moon or the Eagle Moon. The Ojibwe call it Bear Moon. The Tlingit call it the Black Bear Moon. The Dakota, Lakota call it Raccoon Moon. The Algonquin
call it
the Groundhog Moon. And the Haida, we'll call it Goose Moon. And it goes on, and I love this about this. The Cherokee called it the month of the bony moon or the hungry moon because it was the time of year when they had the least amount of food. So everyone, that's why I love this article in that it's very clear to reference the people and the interpretations of that full moon. So wherever you were on the planet, whatever nation or tribe you were with, that would mean what it meant to you. So I think that everything is open to interpretation, depending, just like if I can speak with largely my Viking Scandinavian people, it's the astrology and symbols go together. And then we have the Viking runes, which are kind of a language, and how they would all work together, but a lot of things would align with the stars. So, it's really relative to the nation of people, and I'm not meaning race, I'm talking nation, and where you are geographically. Everyone at one point was indigenous people. We all have in it, you know, we're all indigenous to some area.
Right.
On the planet, which, you know, where our people had, you know, evolved over thousands of years before we started crossing boundaries. So
I often wonder how much of the local geographic area it kind of informs a lot of the style of, you know, the culture, the theme, the flavor, those kind of, you know, everybody's after the same thing. Everybody wants to connect with that something deeper that we all feel. And because people have had a knack for predicting things, I mean, you read my mind and answered my question about, you know, why didn't you call it the colonizing moon or something along those lines. And it's just, I wonder how much of an input is that, because we know that humanity is, of course, part of nature. We're part of this, you know, web of life and energy. And I just am curious as to what role that geographic location may play and just the flavor and the type of indigenous
divination. I think it's everything.
Divination.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I had at one time in my adulthood come across this wonderful big Bible. And I just think there are great stories in the Bible, to be honest. It's historical stories, unless they're made up fiction, but it's cool. In this particular Bible, which was like a foot thick, had all kinds of, what do you call those drawings, Michael, from the 1800s, where it's done in ink? You know what I mean? There's a name for it.
I'm going to call it a sketch, but I don't really know.
But all the sketches about what the earth looked like, what the fauna was, the geography and of that period 2,000 years ago, what plants were growing, how things, everything was so different.
Let's talk about how different things are. The fact that we have journals and different things from, you know, that period of time where the detail of the drawing is so precise, it's remarkable. And I have to ask, why do you not see that same level of detail going back? Well, I guess you kind of do in some ways of busts and different things of different Egyptian pharaohs, leaders and things. Mm-hmm. But almost like the photorealism. You didn't have the photorealism in sketches and artistry. And I think that is something that grows through generation to generation. We, of course, stand on the shoulders of giants.
Well, I think that there's a lot of information that we glean over because we're going too fast.
No,
but if we pay attention to those details, that's critical to the interpretation of the time. And we're talking history here. So as it evolved, you know, more and more information was passed along. But each generation gets a different twist. We use language differently. We have to consider that too. Our use of language, we have so many words that nobody even knew 100 years ago. Mm-hmm. So we assume in our look back at history that it looks like now, and it does not. So that's where, when we historically consider what divination was, it meant something very difficult. That you go for a reading now, you want somebody to divine your future. It's love, money, and, you know, whatever. And I think what the most important elements, let's say hundreds of years, thousands of years ago, was, will we have food? Will my family be well? You know, where, what part should we migrate to? What happens when we go here? And I think it was more environmental. The living with nature more was certainly a critical element to survival.
Mm-hmm.
And we take a lot of things for granted now. So again, that interpreting is so subjective. And that's why I love history, because I imagine what that would be at that time.
You know, the wonderful thing about history is the human experiment has had so many different variations, and I'm borrowing that phrase. I can't remember who I credit it, but it's essentially this different, you have so many different cultures, so many different iterations of what it means to be human, in these different cultures that you can really kind of see the spectrum of humanity. We're talking about divination and how different it is today. You go in for a reading, you want to know, you know, what's my love life going to be like, my financial life going to be like. You know what they used divination for back in the day, and of course we touched on it, but the Spartans were famous for using it. All Greeks work, but the Spartans were especially religious. They were very religious, you know, very conservative people, and the Spartans would, on the battlefield, maybe minutes away from a battle, have a priest, you know, slaughter an animal, read the intestines, and decide, is it a good time to charge or not?
No, true.
So the stakes have changed.
Well, and, you know, my oldest daughter the other day said, you know, of course, we love our Viking history. And she said, you know, we like watching Viking shows. But she said, I can't imagine to be in that reality, because the minute somebody would raise a sword, I'd run. You know? Like, I'm not that brave.
Or
like,
how about this? You know, being you know, a slave of some, you know, great leader and being expected to die along with, no, that's a bad deal. That's a bad day.
But, well, and would it please the gods? You know, would the gods be pleased? Spirits be okay if we did this, or we're going to go conquer this one? And, you know, so they were all, again, reality was a very different perspective for sure.
Well, and I think one thing that, you know, of course we're talking about some extreme examples in terms of history, but let's also talk about I think we've maybe touched on this already, but about how divination kind of, what does it mean for the day-to-day life for somebody who's, you know, I definitely don't claim any natural talent to divination, but we do use our instinct. We do use that intuition. Is that on the periphery of divination? Is it the same trajectory? And
absolutely.
I know Wendy had made some comments as to how much it's been a part of her life in the chat, and thank you for sharing that. And it's just, you know, something that we're all kind of in tune with, but I think to, like everything in life, to varying degrees. And I go ahead.
Sorry, Michael. Charles has said, I'm not sure what I think about most methods of divination. I'm with you. Again, I think you can divine thoughts or impressions from absolutely anything. And so it's always about who is doing the interpreting. So what methods? I don't think it matters, you know, except when people make up weird stuff nowadays. It's just, to me, bonkers.
But weirder than throwing bones or intestines to see what the future holds?
Yeah.
Hasn't we crossed that bridge already?
No, putting tarot cards on chakras for healing stuff is just kind of weird for me. I think people are just trying to think. People are trying to do things now to stand out and make money. That's usually what happens. And it's commercialized like crazy. So
that's true.
You know, but we can just be real about that.
Well, here's another thing. This is another wonderful thing about history, and we're talking about divination and how it can become corrupted. We're talking about the history of divination. Let us not forget about how the history of divination was corrupted. It was about making money, and it was about, you know, telling certain leaders what they wanted to hear. The Greek and Persian wars were a fascinating thing. And when you get into the weeds of it, it shows such history, and it shows how we existed as human beings 2,500 years ago. And the, you know, one thing is that became to be known that, you know, the Persians were actually a fairly, and I don't want to get into history here real quick, but just to give you some context, obviously the movie 300 is a huge exaggeration. The Persians were known as a relatively moderate and temperate empire, much better than the Assyrians and Babylonians that they replaced in terms of quality of life for their subjects. But they were an empire, and they would use their influence, and they were famous for, you know, funding the Oracle of Delphi, excuse me. And they would pay gifts to their gods, because that was one of their things. They would honor the local god. They would not replace whatever territory they came into with their pantheon or their belief system per se. They would oftentimes say that they came in the name of their god. And, you know, your god foretold this. In fact, talk about divination. there's a, you talked about stories from the Abrahamic Bible, the Christian, you know, Judeo-Christian Bible. One of those, and please correct me if I'm wrong on this because I don't remember it clearly, was it Daniel who was in the court of Babylon and this king saw a floating hand?
Oh, it's too far back in my library brain. Don't ask me, Michael.
Well,
it would take me a week to retrieve that, and I'd still have to go look it up. So.
There is a Hebrew book. It's a Hebrew a prophet. He was in Babylon, and it was the last Babylonian king. And the king saw a floating hand and called all of his priests and holy men and people who would divinate things. They called them in and they basically asked them to explain what this was, and none of them could. And he called this, we'll say Daniel or Ezekiel, perhaps. I think maybe that sounds better, but I apologize. I should have researched this. He called them in and he was able to say it's because they sacked Judea. They destroyed the temple. They carried away, you know, people from Israel and Jews to Babylonia. And they carried a lot of relics and holy artifacts as well. So, this man divinates that this floating hand that he saw is basically God saying, you messed up, and now I'm going to bring your downfall. In comes Perseus the Great. He's
Yes, Perseus.
And very famous, probably one of the most pivotal figures in human history. Comes in, sacks Babylon, the first Persian emperor, basically, and he sends all of the Jews back to Israel. He helps fund the building of the second temple, the Wailing Wall is now in Jerusalem. And he's in the Bible, and that's an old story of divination, of basically the king of Babylon being told it's going to go down. Of course, that was written after the fact. Who knows what happened? It's a story, but it just gives you the mindset of what it meant and how far back it goes. And we've talked about it on the grand scale, and we've talked about it on the individual scale.
Well, by the way, Charles has said in the chat that it was King Belshazzar in Daniel 5.
Thank you. It was Daniel.
But yeah. You know, there's been a reference also of palmistry in the chat room, and I want to address this.
Oh, absolutely.
I love palmistry. As a matter of fact, I did study under a wonderful palmist many years ago. Donna was the coolest lady. But she would say that you have to read both hands. The left hand is kind of what you come into this world with, what you're spiritually attuned to doing or achieving, and the right hand is what you do with it. She would also say that your hands change, that you can grow your own lines. So I want to make that clear. That as experience, if you really analyze and watch your hands over many years, you see some lines appear, some other lines might disappear. Now, that would have nothing to do, by the way, with weight loss or gain. I'm just saying that the lines in the hands change. But my question is, you have the heart line, the head line, the life line, the career line, you know, the fate lines. Who decided that that was what it was? That's where I go, Michael, is I'm willing to go for the ride in this, you know. Yeah, okay, that's the headline, that's the heart line, I'll go with that. But who decided that was the headline? Who decided that that was the heart line and that's your lifeline? Like, where did that come from? And that's an answer we'll never have. But this is where whatever I read, whatever I come across, is I have those questions. So it means what it means to you. The tarot, to me, I have a comfortable interpretation of them, that I see it all as storytelling in languages. Two languages that came together, and they tell a story. And I have my own interpretations. And I'm comfortable with that, and that's how I can, you know, I utilize the tarot to stimulate my intuition, and it just partners really well. Some people partner really well with palmistry. Some people partner really well with even to hold an object, you know, psychometry. Or if we can go on and on and on about all the
just what they, you know, what they vibe with in a very literal sense.
Exactly. So it is what you vibe with. And I I do appreciate palmistry. The one thing I will tell everybody, that the one thing I look for if I'm curious about somebody and their behavior is if the head line and the heart line is one line straight across, they don't differentiate. Now, they can be joined up with little cracks and stuff, don't get me wrong. But if it's one straight line across, Donna would say that that is means somebody who is more sociopathic, psychopathic, having a psychopathy. And there has been prison studies done that people who have that line straight across on both hands do tend to be repeat criminals. Now, I knew that, giving an example, I knew one girl many years ago who had the one straight line across in her left hand, but not in her right hand. And she tended to need medication a lot because she was had a lot of depressive disorders. But it was manageable. So, again, all these, how you would see it, if the headline and the heart line are distinct in the left hand, meaning you're born that way, but they somehow got stuck, that would say, what are you going to do about that? And it's still kind of manageable. So I'm just saying that I have found those to be pretty accurate in my observations. There have been studies, psychological studies, that back that up. And it's fascinating.
I wonder how many people will check their palms like I did after you started talking about that.
I'll bet everybody did.
But
It's in the way if you kind of fold your hands, middle finger to the ring finger on the left, if it kind of circles down toward the heart line, if there's a circle, it's called a moon. That means on your left hand that you're very receptive to intuitive energy. And in the right hand, if you still have that little moon shape, again, between the middle finger and the ring finger, it means that you know how to interpret that. So that would be, my old teacher would say, that's the mark of a natural born reader. So
I'm going to have to get a recap on this when I listen to the archive.
Yeah, it's really interesting. But again, it's in the whole context of things. And there's tiny little things in the hand that I met one other palmist, believe it or not, he was a Mormon who did palmistry. It seems like an oxymoron to me. But
a lot of shucks and golly gees.
I know, but he was really good at it. The problem is he didn't deal well with life pressure and stuff, so he couldn't read for too many people because it would upset him. You know, he had a very soft heart. And
I get that.
So anyway, he decided, I knew him very well. He was in television, and so we got together. He did a reading for me, but he was so fixated on the first 20 years of my life, he couldn't tell me about the rest of my life because of all the things I'd been through in the early part. And it was interesting. So it's all in who is doing the interpreting, you know,
absolutely.
And that is the thing of it. And so you can use absolutely anything to divine information that activates your psyche, that kind of gets the juices going and tapping you in. So,
well, that's what it's all about, right? It's just it is just a physical way to focus the abstract of the mind, because the mind is not attached necessarily, well, here I am speaking on something we can't prove, and it's entirely subjective. But the mind is not something that is strictly attached to the physical. The physical and the mind interrelate. It's something to focus that energy, and it can be different for everybody. Is just kind of what I'm taking away from this, and this has been just...
It's exciting.
Yeah, it is.
We're going to start taking names soon, but I'd like to address something that Charles has mentioned. He was born left-handed but turned right-handed, because his teacher wouldn't let him write with his left, which is, sorry to say. So he's not sure how to read his left and right hands kind of thing. It doesn't matter. The polarities of the body, left side is the receiving side, which is the opposite in the brain. Right side of the brain is creative. So your left side, as it crisscrosses, the right side is the giving side. And that That polarity is the polarity. The only time somebody's polarities might be off is if they're emotional, and then they go into a reverse until that's straightened out. But in the figure eight of the body, think about blood going up on the left side of the body, up through the head, down the right shoulder, and crossing over the heart again and going left the bottom side, up around. So it's a figure eight, but you take in information from your left and you give with your right. One of the things I learned in sales when I was very young is you want to really listen to what somebody is saying. Look in their left eye. You'll receive better. Or pardon me, their right eye. You want to give it. You look in their left eye.
You know, that's very interesting. Dogs do the same thing.
Yes, they do.
And, dogs are just an incredible example of how humans have used eugenics to form a creature that responds exclusively to our needs. Absolutely man's best friend, and we do not deserve them. But the dog barking in the background while I had it muted is the divination to me that it is time to draw cards for this evening.
I enjoyed this conversation. I love the history of it. I know it's nothing, not for everybody, but it's exciting for me.
Nothing gets me more than history, especially when you combine that with, you know, truly unverifiable questions that we like to delve into of what is possible, what is existence. But one correction I do want to make, I was speaking earlier, and I don't know why I conflated this. It's Cyrus the Great was the first emperor of the Persian Empire. He's the one that's listed in the Bible. But after that little correction, moving on, we're definitely going to be pulling some cards, and I think, should we just delve right into it?
Well, we better get to it, because there's names popping up everywhere here, so.
All right.
Let's go, Michael.
If chat's going by fast, but if I'm correct, we have Dr. Edward first. And let's see, I have number 18, Evolution. Evolution is the driving force of all life. Change is always afoot. Be aware and participate in the evolution of present energies that change situations. Resistance to change is born from fear of losing control. Resistance to change prolongs discomfort. But fear not, personal growth and enlightenment are sure to result in the wake of your own evolution and that of life around you. Thus, entropy is lowered.
Well, I like this Five of Clubs. I see a little victory here for you that you may have crossed what I call like crossing a bridge, a spiritual bridge in a way, where sometimes we hesitate before we cross over. But I see in this evolution with the Five of Clubs is that there is change and movement. So I think something has shifted, and I want to go even in the last few days for you, Edward. So I want to say carry on, because things are starting to fall into place differently now for you. It's exciting. So we have Jamil next.
Jamil, I have number 6 for you, boundaries.
All right.
It is important for you to establish clear boundaries for yourself. Equally, it is necessary to be aware of others and to not overstep or encroach on their boundaries. This is a mark of a self-complete individual. Reassess and assertively protect your healthy boundaries while looking to see where you are overstepping elsewhere. Begin with asking yourself, who owns me?
The Three of Spades can mean that, in my view, and what I get from this, Jamil, is somebody might have disappointed you. Or, flip side, is somebody has expressed that you've disappointed them. In any way you look at it, it's understanding that there might have been a crossed boundary, or understanding better what the boundary is. And communication is the key. So, Wendy is saying that Jamil had this card back in January 19th. So that's establishing some better lines of communication and understanding. And I think that's maybe a little shift that you're going through at the moment, Jamil.
I can definitely empathize, Jamil. But good message. And I believe we have Dr. Raven next.
We do.
And I have number 24, Truth.
All right.
There are many ways to discover cosmic truth. It begins with knowing who you are and why you are who you are. This is your truth. Discovering cosmic truth involves further discovering the truths that are often concealed within a relationship or a life situation. Yet the only truths kept secret are those we will not see. This is a time of deep introspection to intuitively gauge the way ahead. This card may indicate that there is truth in something or in a direction.
I love the Nine of Diamonds here for you. And the Nine of Pentacles, in other words. And that's, what's your truth? What kind of environment do you want? You know, I remember, it kind of brings to mind a woman I knew years ago. I'm still in touch with her from time to time, but she likes everything in pink. That makes her happy. You know, and I said, it doesn't make a lot of room if you want to meet a man. She goes, I don't care. I like pink, you know, but it makes her happy. So, Raven, what makes you happy? I guess that's what do you need to do with your environment that might make you happier and just bring a little bit of joy. Maybe it's a little more color, rearrange the furniture, you know, that you live better in your truth. I don't know. Feng shui things maybe.
You know, I was just
bit.
Thinking feng shui. There is something to feng shui, which, you know, I don't necessarily think it fits a specific pattern. If it's your pattern, how does it make you feel? You can, there's no universal laws to feng shui.
Well.
But, all right.
I hope that makes sense, Raven. Ronnie is next, I think, Michael.
And Ronnie, I have number 12, Spirit, Cosmos, Divine Energy. Drawing this card indicates the evolving relationship you have with your own inner spirit or higher self within the context of the greater universe. You are growing your relationship with the cosmic consciousness. Continue to observe and appreciate the interconnectedness of all life forms within the fabric of life and the important role that you and they play.
Seven of Diamonds. I see that as harvest. Ronnie, and I feel like you're onto something here. Will you start to harvest the work and what you've put into it, and you're connecting more at that spiritual level as well as the physical level? So that's what I'm saying here. Is I think that you continue as you are, you'll start to reap the benefits. So I like that for you. And right away, I know that seven is a month also, July. I don't say anything unless it pops in my head to be relative. And that's what I'm thinking, where there's another big turning point in July in this way for you.
Very interesting.
Audra, what do we got for Audra?
Audra, I have number 35, one planet, one race, one ancestry, one destiny. Divine energy lives in all things. Diversity in nature and among humanity is not an evolutionary mistake. It is an evolutionary constant. This card advocates equality, peace, unity, healthy life skills, higher consciousness, and spiritual enlightenment. It is critical for our spiritual evolution that we display tolerance and equality towards others as well as ourselves. Remember, you are of divine energy. Love that card. It touches on something we were talking about before the broadcast.
Two of Hearts, Audra, in support of that. New relationships coming together, new agreements. Sometimes there's promises involved in this, but somehow it doesn't always have to be intimate. A lot of people interpret the Two of Hearts as, oh, that's a love interest. No, it doesn't have to be. It depends. One planet, one race, that would be more, I would see that as a bigger, the macro, as opposed to the micro. And in this case, there might be, although there's been, you know, maybe some stress in the past little while, Audra, I think that there are blessings in disguise here. So I think that this, things are going to really turn interesting for you, and you'll be making new agreements that'll be beneficial to you. I like that.
All right.
Charles.
I have number 15, Belief System and Knowledge Base. Now, for some reason, I feel like we pulled this one recently, but we each operate life from an existing belief system, and sometimes the solution or direction lies outside of our belief system. Equally, when knowledge is expanded, a belief system calls for a revision. Consider that opening the mind for more information and knowledge may be required, subsequently adjusting a belief system. Know that the knowledge you seek is within.
I've got the Jack of Hearts, so that's the Knight of Cups in tarot language. beliefs and knowledge base. I appreciate this for you. Charles is coming from the heart and integrating heartfulness with belief. So it's that spiritual, intellectual partnering, if I'm saying that okay. So it's getting more grounded in yourself. I really like that. So you're living from the inside out. So I think something is happening to you that you're going to see the benefits of that. Very cool. In other words, moving out of your head so much, listening to your heart, and letting your mind decipher and sort things through. That's good.
All right. And I will say, oftentimes, easier said than done. But
I know.
We have our card keeper, Wendy, up next, if I'm
right.
Not mistaken.
Yep.
And I have communication, number 41. The most important form of communication is with the higher self, reflecting on one's spiritual evolution. A good communicator both listens and speaks equally, interactively, and with interest. A poor communicator either talks too much or listens too much. A lack of communication will kill any relationship, and this is the most effective method for ending an unhealthy relationship. Assertive communication is direct, honest, empathetic, and focuses on win-win. Communication, along with trust, are one of the two most important relationship traits.
Oh, you got the Ace of Hearts to support that, Wendy. This is how I'm seeing this. I got a little flash. That maybe your method of communication or communicating with others has changed a bit and could even have been softened. Fewer words, more from the heart, and it's paying off for you. And your interactions with others are, I don't know, I feel like smoother. And not that they were ever rough, I'm just saying that you're feeling better about that because you are definitely coming from the heart. So, and again, yeah, we can all say that that's a vague kind of interpretation, but when you start to see that that is the results of it, you say, oh, that's what that is. Yeah, okay. And that's, I think that your communication skills have improved, but so have others around you. And I think you've been rubbing off on them a little bit. That's what I think. Of course, I'm going to give all the credit to Wendy.
Rightly. Rightly so.
We have Ronaldo next, Michael.
And Ronaldo, I have a great card. Number 3, be who you are and walk your own path. You are uniquely designed, one-of-a-kind being, equally entitled to all good things, the same as others. Drawing this card encourages you to be who you are and to walk your own path, not comparing yourself with others. Give yourself permission to accept who and what you are. Move forward in the direction you need to take that best fulfills yourself.
Oh, well, Ronaldo, when you get the Six of Clubs in the BU, I see that as feeling more confident, feeling a little more certain, and being able to make changes now more willingly without the same resistance, perhaps, without the same hesitation, or even that, you know what I mean, that self-doubt. So I think you have also been evolving, and I want to say maybe in the last 2-3 weeks, and just being more of you and saying, oh, this is who I am. Like, this is who I'm born to be. I'm getting to know myself. And I feel like you got good reason to celebrate yourself, Ronaldo. Absolutely. I'm not just being a cheering section either. I feel that for sure.
All right.
We have Eileen next, I believe.
That's what I have as well. And Eileen, I have number 26, Energy Signature. This card is a call to be aware of energy signatures, which is the vibe a person puts out or the energy of a situation. Energy signatures are changed by increased awareness resulting from gaining more knowledge and wisdom of self. Review the present energy signature that you may be sending or that of a situation, individual, or relationship. Keep what is healthy. Remove what is unhealthy. Remember, you cannot change others. You can only change yourself and your own energy signature.
Eileen, The knight or jack of the tarot, to me, could be male or female. Because, in other words, the tarot has the knight for kings, but they don't have princesses for queens. So I always see it as that it can be either. And in this case, it's a jack of diamonds, so the knight of pentacles. And I see that you're being a little more ambitious, entrepreneurial, starting to look at finances. What is your energy signature for creating that the work that brings you a return? So what would you do for profit, so to speak? And I think you're lining up some things here, and I feel that that's absolutely good. So energy signature. So toss out what you don't need, you know, align things and what can get done, it can return what you need, and then still keep the long-term goal in mind. So I think you got some money coming your way. I like that part.
Hey, that's nobody dislikes hearing that. I mean, who has so much money that's like, don't need it?
I know. But, no, not me. Nah. Okay, we have Jeff up next, Michael.
All right, pleasure to have you with us. And I almost feel like I pulled this one already, but it's number 14, Energy Shift, New Chapter. Energy shifts are a natural result from increased awareness, knowledge, and new attitudes that naturally open new chapters in one's life. It's an excellent time to clarify your vision during this time of shifting energy. Reflect, gather your energy, breathe, and step forward with renewed sense of direction. Out with the old and in with the new.
You know, I honestly, too, flipped out. Jeff, so I'm going to go with it. Jack of Spades and the Ace of Diamonds. And energy shift, new chapter with the Jack of Spades, Ace of Diamonds. It's like getting that kick in the butt to get going. Like, what are you going to do now? So you can only think about it and talk about it so long. It's taking the steps to start looking forward. So we all need that sometimes. You know, it's is that waking up one morning, getting that gumption and say, okay, today's the day I'm going to do these three things for myself. I'm going to get that done and see where I'm going. That's what I'm saying. It's just a little bit of assertive energy to look at finances, money, and what do you want to do now? What's next?
Dr. Hunter?
No more procrastinating.
Are you telling me that there are people out in this world that get up in the morning with gumption?
Yeah,
that's an alien concept, but we're just gonna we're gonna have to move on. That's blowing my mind. But and if I'm not mistaken, I think we got to our very last card of the evening. And please correct me if I'm wrong, but we have Dr. Zach joining us again. Having you here. Appreciate you. Yeah, and I have a first wild card of the night. It is wild card number 7, Hope. You know, I know that they're still just cards, but for some reason, being wild cards, I always love pulling them. Hope. Hope lives deep within and inspires the human spirit to continue and expand. Hope, in and of itself, does not create life. Rather, hope desires life. Hope is the root curiosity, interest, invention, and yearning for more. Even when all feels lost and futile, hope is resurrected by a change of beliefs and core values. Safeguard your hope, for it is the first and last fail-safe of your existence. Do not promote false hope, nor encourage codependent hope.
Okay, Zach, so two cards came out for you too, and they are the Death card. I love that. And don't everybody freak out at that death card. And then the Seven of Hearts. So those partner together with hope. That's exciting in my view. So the ending of an old way of thinking, an old way of being, along with hopefulness, it's kind of the rebirthing, and a rebirthing of an idea, rebirthing of dreams. And yeah, you know, the seven of hearts can mean in some ways illusions or fantasies, but that's always at the edge. What else is a dream except, you know, a fantasy that's not come true yet? Right, so I don't see this as a negative. I see this as a positive in that rebirth. And hope is really cool with that rebirth and new dreams. That's how I see that, Zach. Hope that makes sense to you. And he just wrote, that's encouraging. And I see all of this as encouraging for you.
Absolutely.
So, you know, we're getting to the point where we just need a show for readings, for God's sake. But we can't do that. We're not going to do that, Michael. We're getting lots of names as our group keeps growing. I find that very exciting. I'm not complaining. But
No.
We do tend to go in time.
No complaints here, but you know, it goes by fast, and it keeps going by faster and faster. I think we've been hitting that hour mark more and more often, and it's, you know, I don't think that we have anything specifically prepared for next week, but we're going to be putting our heads together and coming up with an interesting topic. You know, tonight's, you know, discussion, anything with history gets me, man. Talking about the history of divination with you, Dr. Vicky, has been an absolute pleasure. And
thank you, Michael.
Again, I know, broken record, I say it, I think, every week, but sincerely, thank you to everybody that joins us in the live chat. Thank you for what you contribute. It's meaningful, meaningful to me, and I know it's meaningful to people that listen in the archives, too.
Yeah, for sure.
So, well, any last thoughts, Dr. Hunter?
No, hang in there, everybody. The world's a crazy place, but be you, do you, and stay true to yourself. Live from the inside out, and don't let them push you around out there.
Nobody could say it better. I can't top it. So with that, until next week, listen, think, learn, grow, and live. Good night, everybody.
Good night, everyone. Have a good week.